Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Thursday morning, Thursday, August the 16th, 2025, 10:16:25, 13 and a half minutes past the hour. Glad to have you with us here this morning for the big program. And we've got a very interesting story to tell this morning. Hope you enjoyed the program yesterday, by the way, with Jazz Sekiro, who lives here in Marion, UFC announcer, independent movie director. Very interesting story. Heard a lot of feedback about that yesterday, so we were very glad to have Jazz in here, and hopefully we'll have him back in the future. But today, a very local story and a very personal story, to be sure. One of our regular callers, and we certainly appreciate that, is Naomi Craig, and she's a longtime Marion resident and certainly speaks up for what she believes for and about here in this community. But something very personal to her has happened as of late. It's a posthumous indictment that came 46 years later. Imagine that, 46 years later, of the person who was involved in with the murder of her mother, and I'm going to have her explain all that better than I could. So we'll just get into this from the beginning. Naomi, it's good to have you in the studio this morning. It's been a while.
It has been a while, Scott. I don't know how close I'm supposed to sit to
the microphone. You're good now. I think okay. They're hearing you.
I've got to put my glasses on because I got old and I can't see. I don't know. Where do you think we should start with this?
Well, let's go back to the very beginning because okay. We've got 2 hours, and I think this will be good to get the background here.
Okay.
Tell us about your mother. Obviously, 46 years ago, you were very young.
I was 5 months old.
5 months old.
When my mother was murdered.
Okay, so what do you remember and what happened?
Well, I don't remember anything about my mother. The only thing I know from back then is, until recently, is what I had been told by my family. Now, I didn't actually know that she was my mother. My family didn't tell me that she was my mother. I was adopted by her sister. There was quite the custody civil war after my mother was murdered, and my paternal family wanted me, and my grandmothers wanted me, and my aunts. You know, so basically everyone in the families fought, and the person, the sister with the most money, won me, basically. And they made the choice then to never tell me that Catherine, my mother's name was Catherine Louise Conley, they made the choice to never tell me that she was my mother. And when I was about 11 or 12 years old, and they made everyone in the family swear also not to ever tell me. And they also made the choice for me to not have anything to do with my paternal family. So I never even knew my father's side of the family existed until I was older. But I was helping my grandmother. My grandmother and great-grandmother lived together on Windsor Street, and that's where my mother lived also, and where the home I was born into. But I was helping her clean out a closet, and the obituaries that they used to make into bookmarks, and it's kind of a 1970s, 1980s thing, you know, the Lord's Prayer or whatever on the back of them. I found one. I had always been told that she was my Aunt Kathy and that she had been murdered. I found one, and I read it, and it said that she left behind her infant daughter, Naomi. Well, I knew I didn't have any cousins named Naomi, so I went and asked my grandma, and my grandma broke down and told me the truth. But at that time, she swore me to secrecy because she was afraid that she would never get to see me again, because part of the deal of being able to see me was never telling me that was my mother. So I think it all came out to the family that raised me when I was about 12 or 13 that I knew. So I don't have any early, no one told me any stories about her because they weren't allowed. And then I guess by the time I found out, the family was just very splintered and broken. And, you know, I had aunts in other state, or an aunt in other state, an uncle in Pennsylvania. My great-grandmother was ill and dying. So there weren't a lot of people that told me stories.
The murder. Mm-hmm. What were you told about that when she was your aunt and then mother?
My family's always consistently told the same story regardless of what I knew about her. She left, well, now that I know that I'm her daughter, I guess it did change a little bit. She left, what I was told, she left the house and was going to Kroger. Now, after I find out that she's my mother, she was going to Kroger to buy formula for me. And she lived on Windsor Street, the area down by Salvation Army. And she was walking to Kroger, which is now going to be the new fire station. So my mother actually went missing out of the fire, what's going to be the new fire station department. Fire department station. I'm at a loss. Like, my concentration's been really bad. So my family, we never knew what happened between Windsor Street and Kroger, because Kroger said, the employees said they never saw her come inside. So she was found in a field. She went missing June 1st, 1979. She was found in a field in Morrow County, June 15th, 1979. And she was badly decomposed, obviously, because it was summer and animals had eaten on her body. There was enough evidence to determine that she had been raped, and that her skull was fractured. She suffered blunt force trauma to the head, but it did take her dental records to identify her.
How old was she at the time?
17.
17.
Not quite 18. She would have been 18.
Mm-hmm. Now, at that time, was there a belief as to what had happened? Who did this?
No. She went missing from Marion County, or Marion City, but was found in Morrow. So Marion handled the kidnapping portion of it, and Morrow County handled the murder portion of it. And it seems like now, knowing what I know now, it seems like they never communicated with one another. So Marion, she went missing on June 1st. Marion would not allow my family to make a missing persons report until she'd been missing for 48 hours. So late on June 3rd, they took the report for the missing persons. Marion Starr didn't run her picture until June 14th. And she was found on June 15th. So she was labeled as a party girl. You know, she was a young teenage mother. My family was poor. They kept telling her, my grandmothers, that she would show back up once she sobered up, just give it some time. And, you know, those days then turned into weeks. And I get the feeling that nobody was doing much in those first few weeks to actually find her. And then they realized, oh, crap, we do have a situation when her body turned up instead of her coming back home.
When the body did turn up, what was happening then? I mean, obviously you're very young at that time, but since you've been able to go back and read and see what was going on, what was happening?
Okay. I guess I'm just going to lay the evidence out in the order that it was presented to me, and it was presented to me in the order that I had questions. So it'll jump around for a minute. The man that murdered my mother, or I'm sorry, that was indicted by Morrow County Grand Jury recently for murdering my mother, his name was Dana Slane. And my mother, I was told that my mother was familiar with him because everybody used to hang out at the city parking lot. And it was something I remember, you know, people doing as a teenager, shooting the loop. And even after finding all of this out and speaking with some of my mother's friends, they would have known each other on like a name, you know, we're at the same place, or like maybe we work together. So it would be, hey, Scott, you know, but you and I know each other better than that. But like a coworker or someone that you're around a lot, but you're not friends with. So Marion started and run that picture until the day that she was actually found. So the Marion Star, their first article was June 14th, and then the day that she was found, they ran a picture. A woman called the Marion City Police Department on June 15th of 1979 and said that she didn't realize until she saw that picture, but she believed she witnessed my mother's kidnapping. And she said that she was at Kroger that night. It was the first of the month, so she had received her food stamps, so that's how she was certain of the date. It was the first of the month, and that was the day my mother went missing. But she noticed a man and a woman in the parking lot arguing, and she saw the guy grab her and smack her and throw her in the van. Well, it's 1979. Domestic violence is far more common back then. You know, women were still property, and those kind of things just didn't get reported. You know, they still don't to this day, but you're much more likely to get some help than you were back then. But she realized then that she had witnessed my mother's murder, or I'm sorry, kidnapping. And she called the police on June 15th. And she gave a description of the van. It was general, but it matched the van that this Dana Slane person owned at that time. That got the police looking into Dana Slane because, you know, they asked around, like, who has this van? And it's my understanding he was also known to the police just for kind of being a drunk rabble-rouser. And so that my mother was found on June 15th. The police tracked down the van, and he had sold it on June 12th. So he actually sold the van before my mother's body was found. And through title paperwork, they found the van and brought the van back and to be examined. Now, this is all Marion City Police Department, and they've not told Morrow County about any of this. And Marion processed the van. They did, no DNA existed back then, obviously, but they could type blood, whether it was animal or human, and A, B, O, that sort of thing. And they did their fancy black light or whatever it is, that luminol or whatever, to do blood trace evidence. And I mean, obviously he had cleaned the thing out when he sold it, because you can't just sell a murder scene to somebody, you know, that's covered in blood. But when they started looking at the inside of the van, it was like someone had done a bad cleanup job on it. There was blood on the passenger side door window. There was blood on the windshield. There's blood on the front seats. Blood on the floor. Traces, I should say, I guess. Blood on the back seat. There's those cloth curtains that they had in the 70s, and there was blood on those. So basically, the thing was covered in non-visible blood residue. They typed it, and it was human blood. But because it had been cleaned, they couldn't get like an A, B, or an O on it. But they knew it was human. So you have this van that's covered in human blood, and now you have someone that saw a woman being thrown into a van that looked very similar to this. To back up, Dana Slane was in the hospital for surgery on his leg, and on May 25th of 79, he got out of the hospital. My mother went missing 6 days later. He had surgery on his leg. He had pins in his leg and a cast. And so that was a Friday that she went missing. By Monday morning, he had called Dr. Ravella, who was the only orthopedic surgeon at the time in town, and he was the one that had performed his surgery also, and told him that he needed a new cast because he had gone up to Cedar Point for the weekend and his cast was covered in blood. And the doctor thought it was strange, but they scheduled an appointment to get him in. Now, there's some controversy floating around on the internet about where he lived when this happened, but I was told that he was staying out with his grandmother on Boston Road. And people are saying that he lived on Wilson Avenue. I don't know. I don't care. I know what the sheriff told me. I don't know if he was staying out there so Granny could nurse him back to health or what was going on, but I know what the Morrow County Sheriff told me. And Grandma hadn't seen him all weekend. He left on Friday. Grandma hadn't seen him all weekend. When she came home on Monday, he didn't have a cast on his leg. And, you know, she knew he just got out of the hospital and et cetera. And she was concerned. Grandma was questioned by the police. That's how I know all of this. So it's not like...
Back then.
Yes, back then. Yeah. So Grandma was questioned in 79 about the cast. I'm calling it the cast of controversy. But Grandma was told that the cast, by him, that the cast was itchy and he took it off. And when she expressed her concern about having cast off so soon after surgery, he's like, don't worry, I'm going to have another one put on. So, you know, that's a pretty contradictory story about, you know, you're calling the doctor and it's blood soaked and you're telling Grandma it was itchy. But regardless, the cast was off of his leg. Now, when he went to Dr. Ravella, Dr. Ravella noted all of this. That's how we know this because, as I said, Dr. Ravella was questioned a couple times as well. And Dr. Ravella had noted that he came in without the cast, but also all of the work that Ravella had done, the pins, the stitches, all of that was fine. It was intact. There's no reason that it would have bled. So there was no reason that he would have had a bloody cast that he needed to remove himself. And if he did, the blood would be on the inside of the cast, not on the outside of the cast. But it was like someone else said yesterday, if you bleed through a cast, then you're dead because, but so, you know, the story doesn't hold water. And even the doctor noted that he thought it was strange that someone would go to an amusement park, you know, within days of having major surgery on their ankle. And he noted other things, but the doctor said he didn't know anyone was missing. Otherwise, he would have reported it to the police. He didn't know anyone was missing because the police didn't bother putting out a statement or to tell the Marion Star, hey, we're looking for this missing woman or anything like that. But the doctor did note that it seemed highly suspicious.
So there is somewhat of an investigation going on then. Doctors are questioned. Mm-hmm. The van is gone over. Mm-hmm. Grandmother's questioned. There's a person of interest. Mm-hmm. So why does that not go anywhere?
I don't know. He was questioned multiple times.
And he was questioned?
Yes, he was questioned multiple times. I don't know why that information never made it to Morrow County. Morrow County never questioned him. Only Marion did. Even though Morrow County was investigating the murder, I mean, you have blood evidence, and you have the cast, you have the no alibi for the weekend, that she went missing, and Marion never did anything with any of it.
So how long does this investigation go on?
Well, I have a newspaper article. So we knew all of that in 1979 because they never disclosed any of that to my family. And I never heard the name Dana Slane. Like, there were lots of names that were floated around over the years, but I never heard the name Dana Slane. So if they had the police had mentioned that name to my family, trust me, they would have clung on to it because, I mean, they... My family was sure that everyone was murderers, you know, everyone, not just whoever murdered my mom, like very, very hyper-vigilant, obviously, after that happened. But, so yes, Marion City Police Department had questioned Dana Slane. They had known that he had a bloody van. They had known that he had the contradictory cast story. They had known that he was familiar to my mother, like they would have known each other well enough that he could have said, hey, what's going on? Come over here and let's talk for a sec, or, you know, whatever you would say, I guess, to lure somebody in to murder them. And my parents, there's a newspaper, Marion Star article. It's a 1 year anniversary of her death, 1980. My family's out front of City Hall protesting, and the answers to her murder are just like right inside the door.
So what is the best guess as to why they didn't do anything? Because 1979, 1980, The Marion Star has a substantial staff at that point.
Yes.
WMRN has a substantial staff at that point. They're reporting these things, I would guess. The police department is pretty substantial at that point. So
that's one of the questions that's eating me alive now. And like, is it conspiracy? Is it apathy? Is it, I don't know. I don't know why they didn't do anything to this man. Because 2 months after he murdered my mother, he was arrested by Marion County Sheriff. I'd have to look at the article. He was arrested by a Marion County law enforcement agency and charged with two counts of gross sexual imposition, where he had a 17-year-old and a 20-year-old in the car that he was trying to beat and rape, and they just happened to get free. So 2 months after, now I don't know when the blood evidence came in for sure. I know that June 15th they knew that she was kidnapped. And that, you know, so they know for sure she's kidnapped. She's not ran off and partying and just, you know, fell in with the wrong crowd. They watched her be snagged. So it was really a crime. I don't get it. I don't know why, when he was known to the police, when we know about the van, when we know about the cast, why that information was never acted upon.
What answers were they giving at this time? Obviously, your family was down at City Hall. What were they saying?
Well, I mean, I don't have the newspaper article in front of me, but I mean, they were telling my family at that point no evidence existed. It would never be solved. There's even an editorial in the Marion Star that, written by the editorial board. I don't know if it was the editor themselves or it was the editorial board, but it was something to the effect of justice isn't swift. And sitting back and looking at that article now, it just makes me want to, I don't know, scream, throw things. Because no, justice isn't swift, but it sure could have been.
Now, this is written by the Star
editorial.
Somebody there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting because I would guess, now I don't know what was going on in 1979, but for somebody at the Star to write that, they would have had to have been told that by somebody. And I'm guessing they were probably told by the police department, I would guess, if they were the ones investigating it.
Yes, because my family, if you read the article, and I can forward you the articles, instead of just trying to go through my phone. And I do want to give just a quick shout out to our buddy Cody. Mm-hmm. He has helped me a lot through this, throughout the way, putting the historical piece of it together. Like I knew it all, but it's just really hard to go back in time and put all of those things together. So he's good with that stuff. So he's been kind and did all of that for me. So shout out to Corey for doing that. I don't understand this man's connection, and that's a person that I was speaking with last night that's been doing some investigative stuff for a lot of years. They're like, honey, I don't even want to write a piece about this. I want to figure out why all this information was buried for so many years.
Is there anybody left who was in a substantial position then with the police department who is around? Do you know who was investigating the case, who was questioning these people?
That's the thing, is that Morrow County was reluctant to give me, well, I shouldn't say reluctant, they didn't give me any paper information. Everything was given to me verbally. I was called on September 18th, and the phone said no caller ID. My son and I were working on geometry, and it was one of those, Mom, why do I need to know this? And I'm like, to pass this test, that's why you need to know this. And the phone said no caller ID. And I was like, should I answer it? And of course, he wanted to be done with geometry for a minute. So yeah, he said, answer it. And it was the detective. I just didn't realize it was the detective at that time. And he's like, is this Naomi? And I'm like, well, who's this? Because I'm thinking only the police call no caller ID. And I said, may I ask who's calling? And he told me, or he said, is this Naomi Craig? And I was like, oh man, it's the police. And he said, was Catherine Conley your mother? And I just, silence. And screaming and crying when I said yes. He told me, we have a suspect in your mother's murder, and I didn't believe him. But his name is Detective Brandon Newsom, and I want to give a shout out to him because he's been a detective in Morrow County for less than a year, and he worked on this case for 4 months and was able to solve it. But he did explain to me that a lot of the documents aged, scrawly handwriting, he had to search. Well, actually, he was in Marion looking for a different file and accidentally came across my mother's and knew that he was going to need it. So as far as people still being alive, no. But that should speak to the overwhelming evidence in the case that 50 years later, he was able to convince a grand jury with the evidence that he did have, with even with dead witnesses and scrawly handwriting and old documents, that the evidence that he had was so compelling that it convinced 7 out of 9 people, at least 7 out of 9 people, that this person should be tried for this case. And when the grand jury was convened, they did not know this person was dead. They thought they were indicting a live person. So it wasn't like they indicted him posthumously to give my family closure, because trust me, this is the opposite of closure. They thought they were indicting a real person that would stand trial. So evidence and people, no, not really. And as far as my family goes, there's me and some cousins. So I couldn't share this with a grandmother. I couldn't share this with any of the aunts or uncles that this killed. You know, I'm sitting in that room with my husband, and you, when people are giving you news like this, you just, it's called dissociation in psychology. It's kind of like your soul leaves your body, is what I call it. And it happened a couple times that day. But the people that needed the answers that I was getting are all dead. And they didn't have to be. These answers could have came years ago. And I don't understand why no one ever did anything to help us.
What is it? 46 years later now. 46 years later. What brought about the indictment posthumously of this person?
You know, you're talking about how I stand up for what I believe in and et cetera, et cetera. Well, I've gotten a little bit of a following on Facebook from that. And in May of this year, a man named Tim Lamb made a post on a Morrow County page. Now, come to find out, Tim Lamb was friends with Dana Slane. He's got posts all over his page. Rest in peace, my buddy Dana, of 49 years, etc.
Did he just die recently?
Dana died in 2019. So he definitely could have spent a lifetime in prison and could definitely still be sitting there. So it's not like he was killed in 1983 and, you know, no, he died in 2019. And he's actually, I found out, the son of a bitch is buried in the same cemetery as my mother and my grandmother's. So every time that I've gone there since 2019, they're buried in the back. I've driven past his grave. So, you know, that's my mother's birthday is Monday. And I typically go to her grave, but I don't know what I'm going to do this year.
You haven't been back to the cemetery since you've gotten this information?
No. Her birthday is October 20th, so I would be heading there Monday, but I don't know what I'm going to do. But there's more evidence. There's another piece of evidence that we haven't talked about, and it's a letter of confession. And this letter was sent to a person in prison, and I'm going to make up a name just because instead of saying person in prison, it's going to be easier to use a name. I'm giving this person the name of my childhood dog because I don't want anyone. I was only given a first name, and trust me, it's driven me crazy, but I don't want anyone to try to find this person because I was told that they have information on other crimes. And if they can help figure other crimes out, then I want them to be left alone and have their conscience or whatever because this person did testify in front of the Morrow County grand jury also as to what they knew. So it wasn't just old evidence. There was actually a person that testified as well. So I'm going to call him Duke. Duke was my childhood dog. Duke was in prison, and Dana Slain, the murderer, wrote Duke a letter. And in that letter, he detailed my mother's murder, her name, where she was left.
Said her name.
Mm-hmm. And what he did to her. And that he knew the police were on to him because he had been questioned and they took his van and all this other stuff. So the letter, they kept talking about Duke and how Duke had this evidence and how Duke had corroborated her, the letter and her murder and all of this other stuff. And the evidence, they had compelling evidence to go talk to Duke. They had this, they had told me about the letter, but I thought Duke had gotten a conscience and turned this letter over to him. And that's how this all broke loose. You know, I thought, okay, Duke was in that file somewhere and they went and talked to him and Duke was like, here, I've been holding on to this for 43 years. I need to get this off my conscience. And I said, you keep saying you had, because this is another one of those, this is the day I found out Dana Slain's name. So this was the day they got the indictment and they actually laid out all the evidence for me. I said, you keep saying that you have this compelling evidence to go talk to Duke. What's the compelling evidence that you had? They had the letter. I said, what do you mean you had the letter? He didn't give you the letter? How did you have the letter? Where did the letter come from? What do you mean you had the letter? The letter was in a file in Marion City Police Department, the file that had not existed for 46 years, according to everybody sitting up in City Hall. And when Detective Brandon Newsom found the file, he found the letter of confession. It was received by Marion City Police Department December 8th, 1983. Its origins are unknown. Don't know if like a prison guard turned it in or whatever. We do know that it made it to Duke because when Morrow County went to talk to Duke, they're like, we want to talk about this letter. And he said, how do you know about the letter? And they said, we have it. And then without being shown the letter, Duke was able to detail everything that happened to my mother, including her name. So clearly he carried that name on his conscience for how many ever years. And I hope her face haunted him. I hope now, even if he's listening, I don't care what he's doing to help other people. I hope she haunts him every night and that he can't sleep and that he has just a horrible life. But in this letter, okay, so Marion City Police Department got it December 8th, 1983. And December 14th, 1983, they brought Dana Slain in to question him about this confession letter. They even had him sign a Miranda waiver. And they briefly held it up, because, I mean, this is all in a file. They briefly held up the Miranda waiver, and they're like, there's his signature, and they're like, you know, we're not handwriting experts, but if you look at the signature on the letter, and you look at the signature on the Miranda waiver, they're the same. And the detective and the lieutenant actually looked at me and said, we don't know why. We don't understand this. We don't get this. And one of the reasons that they indicted him posthumously, because I don't know if people realize how rare that is. I mean, it's just rare. It does not happen hardly ever. Was because Morrow County saw how horribly my family was done and felt that this is like the only validation that they could give us.
So there's a confession letter that shows up
somehow
in the Marion Police Department
mm-hmm.
in 1983.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring the guy in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Less than a week later.
So they are aware.
Mm-hmm.
They've got it. They
mm-hmm.
know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
They bring the guy in. They question him. This is 4 years after your mother's murder.
Now, and 2 weeks before my birthday.
So what happens after they question him about this?
Clearly nothing.
I mean, is he free at that point? Is he in prison? And
no, he was free.
He's free. So they just go home.
I guess.
And that was it.
They never even turned the letter over to Morrow County. Morrow County, and see, it was in 98 or 99. There's another Marion Star article about it. Morrow County, I lived in Rhode Island for 2 years, maybe a year and a half. And Morrow County contacted me up there and wanted my blood because they wanted, there was a break in the case, and they wanted my blood to do mitochondrial DNA. It was new technology, and I mean, it was crazy. I had to go get a Polaroid camera and have a picture of the doctor withdrawing the blood from me for chain of custody and all this. I mean, back then that was insane. Now we're kind of like, you know, it wouldn't be so crazy, but back then it was just insane. And had my blood shipped from Rhode Island to Ohio and all this other stuff. And we were told then that whatever DNA existed was destroyed and it was a long shot and all of this, you know, all of these excuses, big fat nothing. Well, I found out recently my DNA actually exonerated a man in Marion County or in Morrow County that was going to be taken to the grand jury. That's who Morrow County had always thought did it. And that man was going to be indicted until they got my blood evidence back. My family never knew any of that. That was sprung on me on September 25th, or maybe it was September the week before. But that man was not guilty, obviously. And I mean, so even DNA evidence existed at some point in time. Now, I don't know if it's been destroyed. I don't know.
So I want to come back to 2 points here. Mm-hmm. Okay, in 1983, when the confession letter shows up, they bring the guy in.
Mm-hmm.
He's not in prison. He's not in jail at that point. And they question him about it. Do we know what he said? Did he deny it? Did he say, this isn't mine?
Those notes are not included in the file.
So don't really know what happened there.
No.
Okay, and then back to the point, how did this become a thing? Mr. Lamb on social media.
Sorry. So Tim Lamb, who happens to be the son of Cal Lamb, who owned Dino's and Trotter's, and if you're from Marion, you know who Cal Lamb is. But Tim Lamb posts this thing, posts body found in ditch. It's one of the articles, a few articles that you'll come across if you look up my mother's name. And he posted on a Morrow County page. He didn't post any context. Not, you know, have there been any breaks in this? Has anybody heard anything, you know, in honor of Catherine? Because it was like 10 days before the anniversary of when she went missing. I don't even think it was that long. And somebody that I know from over there was like, did you see this? And I looked and I was like, why would somebody do this? And then, of course, all the comments, oh, my God, this is awful because people are thinking it just happened. I'm like, you idiots, it's in black and white. But that's, you know, there's a whole lot of thoughts that go through your head. And I posted, I said, I'm the baby in the picture. And the reason why none of you know about this is because it happened 46 years ago. And I don't understand why this guy would be posting this now. And I took so much heat on there. I don't know. I cussed so many people, and I had so many people in my inbox. And I actually sent Tim Lamb a message, and I just asked him if he was the sick that killed my mother. I said, because I can't think of any other reason why somebody would post this at this point in time. And he never answered. And I guess I put enough doubt in people's minds by my comment, like, why would you do this? Why would you torture a family like this, basically? No context. That was the weird part. You know, like I said, if somebody would have said, hey, let's not forget that it's almost been almost 46 years and we don't have answers or whatever. But then when I start poking around through his Facebook page and see the kind of people that he hung out with, and then people are telling me things about him, I'm like, okay, he's a scumbag. So maybe he knows a murderer. So I posted what I sent to him on my Facebook, and I said, you guys, this might be the person who murdered my mom, or they might know the person who murdered my mom, and laid out how random and strange this seemed. And from there, you know, people were like, you need answers, you deserve answers. I'm like, listen, y'all, I've been down this road to nowhere before. My family begged for help for decades. I was one of them. You know, I've been told no evidence exists, nothing's going to happen unless someone confesses. You can only do that so many times. You know, you can only send the birthday emails so many times. You can only be reminded on your grandma's birthday to call and see if anybody knows anything or please don't forget us. You can only do that so many times. So I wasn't going to be a part of this. And
damn hooligans on my Facebook page, sending emails and making phone calls to Morrow County and sheriff and the prosecutor. And apparently they got the ear of somebody at the prosecutor's office. I'm just going to say it. Hinton's office didn't want anything to do with it. The sheriff, I've sent him multiple emails over the years and made multiple phone calls, and I've been ignored by him repeatedly. And I was told that it was the prosecutor's office that wanted this reopened. And since the sheriff is the investigative arm of the prosecutor over there, a sheriff's detective was assigned to it.
So at that point, this Mr. Lamb, who doesn't respond, this picture's posted. How does this all get back to where we are, this indictment?
They opened the case.
And they started looking for information, mm-hmm. found this file in Marion, mm-hmm. and this is how it all came together. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
That the answer was laying in City Hall for 43 years.
So had this man not posted this picture?
Exactly.
Nothing.
We wouldn't be having this conversation.
So do we know why he posted the picture?
I'm going with guilty conscience.
It's an odd thing to post.
Just randomly body found in ditch almost to the day, 46 years later, and the dude's your buddy, come to find out. So thank you, Tim Lamb, for posting that, because now we've outed your buddy Dana Slane as a murderer.
Did he say anything in the post
No.
as to why he's posting this picture?
No, nothing. And he was asked repeatedly by other people throughout the post. Because, I mean, of course, there's the hateful people. Well, we have the right to know this. Really? What's a 46-year-old murder matter to anyone other than the people that it actually affected? You have the right to know what? Somebody was killed before you were born? You know, I mean, and so there was all the hate and all of that. And, okay, but there were a lot of people like, yeah, why would you do this? Why? And he eventually took the post down, I guess, and somebody said, he was bullied until he took his profile down. Well, according to Facebook, he's got about three more. So, you know, that one got bullied until it was taken down. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't by me. I didn't encourage any of this. I've not bullied anyone. I sent him one message, and the internet did its thing.
So to posthumously indict somebody, they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? Where does that go?
The case is automatically closed because they can't stand trial. Part of, you know, our constitutional adversarial system is that you have the right to defend yourself. But honestly, I wouldn't want to go through a trial. I would not want to deal with the back and forth and him in jail and then him getting attempted murder, or, you know, he's already so old that we're going to give him 8 years because he's about to die. I wouldn't want to deal with any of that.
So he can't stand trial, so he'll never be convicted of the murder.
Correct.
So this is where it will end. Mm-hmm. He's dead. He's indicted
mm-hmm.
on murder charges.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that feel for you?
It doesn't change my... I never thought knowing what happened would be worse than not knowing what happened.
So until this year, this information is not known by you?
No. Everything I told you is new. Except for, like, the things. Basically, everything was new.
So as you're reading this, what happened, all this detail, you know, that's your mom. Although you didn't get a chance to know her, what's that like all these years later? Almost half a century.
It's been my reality my whole life. So my heart really breaks for my family. That's the pain that I can't get over, is for my family. Because this killed them. It literally killed all of them. It took longer to kill some of them than the others. But it killed them, and it didn't have to. And this destroyed generations. And my family, my cousins and I, were raised by very broken people. My own son, just the other day, you know, I've been trying not to have a
full-on nervous breakdown. My own son comes up and puts his arms around me the other day, and using all his little social emotional learning stuff that he's done, you know, "Mom, I love you, and I'm always here for you, and if you need me, if you just want to go for a walk, if you want to talk, or you just want to sit in the quiet, I'm here with you, Mom, I love you." So even that son of a bitch is affecting my son's life 46 years later.
You're alive. You've read this. You're part of this family. What impact do you think this is going to have for the rest of your life?
I'll never get over this. It's just, I closed one chapter and opened another one that'll never end.
Is it worse to know than it was to not know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because the pain that I feel for my family is worse. I don't feel pain for myself because she was a stranger to me. I mean, she's my mother and I love her in the way that I love her. And I'll get to see her one day. But this pain is worse than not knowing.
You'll get to see her one day. With that belief, do you think that maybe your family knows now? You say they don't know, but with a belief system that you'll see somebody again one day, do you think they might know?
I just hope they're all together.
What would this have done for them if they had been here?
They would have got to see the at this point, nothing. In 1983, it would have helped people heal. They would have not been ignored. The being ignored, oh my God, that people not caring, that is devastating. Me waiting 2 weeks for them to release this almost drove me mad. And I told my husband, I said, it's like the universe, I don't think it's a punishment, but it's like the universe is giving me a taste of what my family experienced back then, just so I can kind of understand, because the being ignored, and you know, they went through it for years. I can't imagine the pain that they suffered. And that's where I am. I won't ever be able to deal with what happened to my family.
You know what? We're going to take a quick break here. We're going to come back in 15 minutes. Stay tuned. Much more to talk about. A very, very interesting, poignant story, to be sure. We'll be back. Don't go anywhere.
From Joey Diori at WGN's Bozo the Clown.
Before we wrap up, I'll ask, and you can or can't, can you do something in the Bozo voice for those people?
You know, the funny thing is, and as I mentioned before, my voice and Bozo's pretty much ended up sounding the same. I'll tell you one quick story. My wife and I were